Welcome to part two's podcast of the 2007 Poetry Extravaganza hosted by the Academy of American Poets at AWP's 2007 conference in Atlanta, Georgia. If you missed part one of this podcast, it is available on AWP's website, www.awpwriter.org. Now you will hear a reading from Marilyn Hacker.
Thank you. Thank you, Cornelius. Thank you, David, for wonderful, wonderful readings. And one more thanks to the Academy of American Poets for making this evening wonderful, terrific reading possible. And I know when it's over, I'm going to rush over there to the book table and buy the books by my fellow readers that I don't have yet, and I hope that everybody else will do the same. This is the title poem of Desesperanto, a made-up word, which is half the name of an imaginary language that everyone can speak, and half about hope and half about despair. And a lot of it is on themes taken from the German Jewish writer Josef Roth, who died in Paris in 1939. The dream's forfeit was a night in jail, and now the slant light is crepuscular. Papers or not, you are a foreigner whose name is always difficult to spell. You pack your one valise, you ring the bell. Might it not be prudent to disappear beneath that mauve-blue sky above the square fronting your cosmopolitan hotel? You know two shortcuts to the train station which could get you there on foot in time. The person who's apprised of your intention and seems to be your traveling companion is merely the detritus of a dream. You cross the lobby and go out alone. You crossed the lobby and went out alone through the square, where two red-headed girls played hopscotch on a chalk grid, now in the shade of a broad-leafed plane tree, now in the sun. The lively, lovely, widowed afternoon, disarmed, uncoupled, shuffled and disarrayed itself, despite itself, dismayed you with your certainties, your visa, gone from your breast pocket, or perhaps expired. At the reception desk, no one inquired if you'd be returning. Now you wonder why. When the stout conductor comes down the aisle, mustached, red-faced, at first jovial, and asks for your passport, what will you say? When they ask for your passport, will you say that town's name they'd find unpronounceable, which resonates when echoed like a bell in your mind's tower, as it did the day you carried your green school bag down the gray, fog-cobbled street, past church, bakery, shul, past farm women setting up market stalls, it was so early. I am on my way to school in. You were part of the town now, not in the furnished rooms you shared with Mutti since the others disappeared. Your knees were red with cold, your itchy wool socks had itched down, so you stooped to pull them up, a student and a citizen. You are a student and a citizen of whatever state is transient. You are no more or less the resident of a hotel than you were of that town whose borders were disputed and redrawn. A prince conceded to a president. Another language became relevant to merchants on that street. A child walked down, whom you remember in the corridors of cities you inhabit, polyglot as the distinguished scholar you were not to be. A slight accent sets you apart, but it would mark you on that peddler's cart street now. Which language, after all, is yours? Which language, after all these streets, is yours? And why are you here waiting for a train? You could have run a hot bath, read Montaigne, but would footsteps behind the bathroom door's bolt have disturbed the nondescript interior's familiarity, shadowed the plain blue draperies? You reflect, you know, no one who would of you echo your author's, because it was he, because it was I, as a unique friendship's non sequitur. No footsteps and no friend, that makes you free. The train approaches, wreathed in smoke like fur around the shoulders of a dowager with no time for sentimentality. With no time for sentimentality, mulling a twice postponed book review, you take an empty seat. Opposite you, a voluble immigrant family is already unwrapping garlicky sausages, an unshaven man and his two red-eared sons. You once wrote, it is true, awful, and unimportant, finally, that if the opportunity occurs, some of the exiles become stormtroopers. And you try, culpably, to project these three into some torchlit future, filtering out their wrangling, one of your languages, about the next canto in their short odyssey. The next canto in your short odyssey will open, you know this, in another hotel room. They have become your mother country. Benevolent anonymity of rough, starched sheets, dim lamp, rickety escritoire, one window. Your neighbors gather up their crusts and rinds. Out of a leather satchel, the man takes their frayed identity cards, examines them. The sons watch, pale and less talkative. A border, passport control, draw near. Rubber stamp or interrogation. You hope the customs officer lunched well. Reflect on the recurrent implication of the dream's forfeit. One night in jail. Audre Lorde always said, save the energy for the end of the reading. Thank you. Yes. I'll go on just a little bit, just a little. This is a Ghazal, a poem we get from Urdu and Farsi where that involves repetitions of a word and a rhyme and couplets that have something to do with each other but can float around in a kind of aleatoric order. And this one is called Ghazal on Half a Line by Adrienne Rich because it's the first line has half a line in it from an old poem by Adrienne Rich. In a familiar town, she waits for certain letters, working out the confusion and the hurt in letters. Whatever you didn't get, the job, the girl, rejections are inevitably curt in letters. This is a country with a post office where one can still make oneself heard in letters. Her one street over neighbors, Madame de Sévigné, who almost always had the last word in letters. Was the disaster pendant from a tongue one she might have been able to avert in letters? Still, acrimony, envy, lust, disdain are landmines the unconscious can insert in letters. Sometimes more rage clings to a page than she would claim. It's necessary to remain alert in letters. An estranged friend donated to a library 3 decades of her dishing out the dirt in letters. And words which resonate and turn within the mind can lie there, flattened and inert in letters. The tightest laced, precisely spoken celibate may inadvertently shrug off her shirt in letters. Ex-lovers who won't lie down naked again still permit themselves to flirt in letters. What does Anonymous compose unsigned at night after she draws the curtain? Letters. okay. This is a poem. This is a dance craze poem too, it takes place in New York City in the 1960s, and it's called Nights of 1964 to 1966, The Old Reliable. And The Old Reliable was a bar on East 3rd Street between Avenue B and C back then. Has a little epigraph from a poem by James Fenton, The Laughing Soldiers Fought to Their Defeat. And a bar I used to hang out in when I was in my very early 20s. White decorators interested in art, black file clerks with theatrical ambitions, kids making pharmaceutical revisions in journals, comp instructors urged they start. The part Cherokee teenage genius, maybe. The secretary who hung out with fairies. The copywriter wanting to know, where is my husband? The soprano with the baby. All drank draft beer or lethal sweet Manhattans or improvised concoctions with tequila in summer when from 3rd Street we could feel a night breeze waft in whose fragrances were Latin. The place was run by Polish refugees, squat Margie, gaunt Speedy, whose sobriquet transliterated what? He'd brought his play from Lodz. After a while, we guessed Margie's illiteracy was why he cashed checks and she perched near the threshold to ban prose, the underage, the fugitive, and those arrayed impertinently to their sex. The bar was talk and cruising. In the back room, we danced, Martha and the Vandellas, Smokey and the Miracles, while sellers and buyers changed crisp tens for smoke and smack. Some came in after work, some after supper, plumage replenished to meet who knew who. Behind the bar, Margie dished up beef stew. On weeknights, you could always find an upper to speed you to your desk and drink till 4. Loosened by booze, we drifted on the ripples of Motown, home in new couples or triples. We're back at dusk with IDs at the door. Bill was my roommate. Russell drank with me, although they were a dozen years my seniors. I walked off with the 18-year-old genius, an older woman, not quite 23. Link was new as Rimbaud and better looking, North Beach bar paideon of doomed Jack Spicer, like Russell, our 2-meter artificer, a corvo whose ecclesia was cooking. Bill and Russell were painters. Bill had been a monk in Kyoto. Stoned, we sketched together till he discovered paupers in black leather and Zen consented to new discipline. We shared my 6th Street flat with a morose cat, an arch cat, and pot plants we pruned daily. His boyfriend had left him for an Israeli dancer. My husband was on Mykonos. Russell loved Harold, who was black and bad, and lavished on him dinners meant for men, like Escoffier and Brillat Savarin. Staunch blonde Dora made rice. When she had tucked in the twins, 6 flights of tenement stairs they'd descend 11-ish and stroll down 3rd Street, desultory night patrol gone mauve and green under the virulent streetlights to the bar where Bill and I, if we'd not come to dinner, Link and Lou and Betty had already had a few. One sweat-soaked night in pitiless July, wedged on booth benches of cracked naugahyde, we planned a literary magazine where North Beach met the Lower East Side scene. We could have titled it When Worlds Collide. Dora was gone in case the children wake up. Link lightly had decamped with someone else, the German engineer, or was he Bill's? Russell's stooped valet brushed my absent makeup. Armed children spared us home, our goodnight hugs laissez-passer. We railed against the war. Soon, some of us bust south with SNCC and CORE. Soon, some of us got busted dealing drugs. The file clerks took exams and forged ahead. The decorators' kitchens blazed persimmon. The secretary started kissing women, and so did I, and my 3 friends are dead. And I'll close with one more poem. Okay. And thinking of those days and perhaps memories of New York and days and a decade, several decades after that. This is an elegy for June Jordan, whom I wish were here with us tonight, poet, activist, marvelous human being. And it's called Elegy for a Soldier, in 2 parts. The city where I knew you was swift. A lover cabbed to Brooklyn, broke, but so what, after the night shift in a Second Avenue diner. The lover was a Quaker, a poet, an anti-war activist, was blonde, was 24. Wet snow fell on the access road to the Manhattan Bridge. I was neither lover, slept uptown, but the arteries, streetlights, headlines, phone lines, feminine plural links ran silver through the night city as dawn and the yellow cab passed on the frost-blurred bridge, headed for that day's last or first coffee. The city where I knew you was rich in bookshops, potlucks, ad hoc debates, demos, parades, and picnics. There were walks I liked to take. I was on good terms with 2 rivers. You turned, burned, flame wheel of words, lighting the page. Good neighbor on your homely street and park slope, whose Russian Zetas, Jamaican grocers, dyke vegetarians, young, gifted, everyone claimed some changes, at least a new food co-op. In the laundromat, ordinary women talked revolution. We knew we wouldn't live forever, but it seemed as if we could. The city where I knew you was yours and mine by birthright, Harlem, the Bronx. Separately, we left it and came separately back. There's no afterlife for dialogue, divergences we never teased apart to weave back together. Death slams down in the midst of all your unfinished conversations. Whom do I address when I address you, larger than life as you always were, not alive now? Words are not you, poems are not you, ashes on the Pacific tide, you least of all. I talk to myself to keep the line open. The city where I knew you is gone. Pink icing roses spelled out passion on a book-shaped chocolate cake. The bookshop's a sushi bar now, and passion is long out of print. Would you know the changed street that cab swerved down toward you through cold white mist? We have a Republican mayor, threats keep citizens in line, anthrax, suicide attacks. A scar festers where towers once were. Dissent festers unexpressed. You are dead of a woman's disease. Who gets to choose what battle takes her down? Down to the ocean, friends mourn you with no time to mourn. Second, last part. You who stood alone in the tall bay window of a Brooklyn brownstone, conjuring mourning with free-flying words, knew the power, terror in words, in flying. Knew the high of solitude while the early light prowled Seventh Avenue, lupine, hungry like you, your spoils, raisins and almonds, ballpoint pen, yellow fool's cap. You who stood alone in your courage, never hesitant to underline the connections between rape, exclusion, and occupation, and separations. Were alone and were not alone when mourning blotted the last spark of you out, around you, voices you no longer had voice to answer, eyes you were blind to. All your loves were singular. You scorned labels, claimed black, woman, and for the rest eluded limits, quicksilver, Caribbean, staked out self-definitions. Now your death, as if it were yours, your house, your dog, your friends, your son, your serial lovers. Death's not yours. What's yours are 1,000 poems alive on paper. You, at once an optimist, a Cassandra, Lilith in the wilderness of her lyric, were a black American, born in Harlem, citizen, soldier. If you had to die, and I don't admit it, who dared? What if each time they kill a black man, we kill a cop? Couldn't you take down with you a few prime villains in the Capitol who are also mortal? June, you should be living. The states are bleeding. Leaden words like homeland translate abandoned dissident discourse. 20 years ago, you denounced the war crimes still in progress. Now, as Jenine, Ramallah dominate, then disappear from the headlines. Palestine, your war. To each nation, its Jews, wrote Primo Levi. Palestinians are Jews to Israelis. Afterwards, he died in despair, or so we infer, despairing. To each nation, its Jews, its blacks, its Arabs, Palestinians, immigrants, its women. From each nation, its poets, Mahmoud Darwish, Kavanaugh, Shahid, who beloved witnessed for silenced Kashmir, cautioned, shift the accent, and he was martyr. Audre Lorde, Neruda, Amichai, Senghor, and you, June Jordan. Thank you.
Now you'll hear a reading from Thomas Lux.
My tear ducts dry walled, not a sob or the sigh of an ant left in me. This autumn, another autumn in which the world hates itself so much. Man ties severed head of another man to the tail of a dog. One frog eats a smaller frog. Wisdom teeth, instead of being yanked, evolve to wisdom fangs. All day, arid, hair-splitting, cheese-paring. One bank buys another bank, and the little rubber thimble on the teller's thumb, that stays the same. Certainly my God can rip the heart from your God's chest and will, God willing, with my help. A trillion milligram hammer, the arc of its swing wide as the ring of Saturn, hits us first on the right temple, then on the left. Good night, lights out, bark the stars. So if you want to clap, you could hold it till the end and clap for all of us. Clap for poetry at the end for all of us. This is called a harmonic scalpel. I read somewhere recently they have a new kind of medical scalpel that somehow cuts by sound, the harmonic scalpel. Of all the tools the surgeon holds, the knife that hums its way to where the surgeon wants to go, of all the tools, that's the best. The patient hears the tune, the anesthesia local, and is soothed. Sometimes a nurse, oh, white on white and her nylons too, will sway to it, though not the surgeon. His or her tapping toe shoe is nailed to the floor. The knife's a radiant singer, but the hand must be steady still. The harmonic scalpel sings its way to the heart, which needs attending to. It's red, it's blue, boom, boom, boom. Above, in the operating theater's low-lit balcony, the medical students, in loose green pants and shirts, with hands learning to find the body's stress on and beneath the skin, the medical students kiss and touch and caress. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't you like to think of them up there doing that? Actually, I'd want them to be watching a doctor doing the operation, too, but... This is called A Happy Majority. It has an epigraph by P.T. Barnum, from P.T. Barnum, which goes, before I joined the great and, I believe, the happy majority. And the happy majority he's talking about are the dead. Before I joined the happy majority, though I doubt one member happy nor one unhappy, I have some plans to discover several new species of beetle. To jump from a 100-foot platform into a pile big enough to break my fall of multicolored lingerie. To build a little heater, oh, not to join the happy ones until some tasks are done, beside each tulip bulb to speed its bloom. To read 42,007 books, list available by request. To learn to read and or write Chinese, CAT scan, Sanskrit, petroglyphs, and English. To catch a bigot, oh, not to join the happy ones until some tasks are done, by the toe. To kiss the clavicle of, name available by request. To pay my respects again at the grave of John Keats. To abrogate my position in God's nihilistic, oh, not to join the happy ones until some tasks are done, dream to hold my mother's hand as she leaves this world, to lay my hand upon my father's heart as he does likewise, and my daughter to be glad I was her father as I exit also in 100 years or so from the conscious to the un. This is called Apology to My Neighbors for Beheading Their Duck. First, it was an accident. I did not mean to sever his head. A book or a being superior or superior with a capital S did not command it thus. He'd gotten into the little yard we share. He stood as still as if he were made of cement, which, in fact, he was. Nevertheless, he was not meant to lose his head. So that I could lop it off, a text was not interpreted, though he was a heterodox duck. He wore a little blue hat. This color is proscribed for a duck's hat. Otherwise, white duck, orange feet and beak, a decent duck, a cause-no-trouble duck. He weighed 100 pounds, weighted down your car to get him here to his new home. Without his head, he weighs 5 pounds less. Without his head broken at the neck, he's a less impressive duck. But still, I had no right to take it. It belonged to him, and he needed it, his head, as we, as every creature, does, despite the swamp, the sump, thriving inside it. He did not belong to me, nor was he of my family. When I dropped a bag, rather than carry it down to the barrels beside the duck, of trash from my fourth floor back porch, that's what did it. Clipped it clean off, for which I offer apologies and cash. But I must reiterate, a book did not tell me I had the right to do so, nor did I hear a voice, a promise from a pearly place. I did it dumb and owe you $50. This is called the joy bringer, another compound word, the joy bringer. The joy bringer breaks the light through the oak trees at dawn. The joy bringer injects the red bird's red. The joy bringer brings the green, lets the cup runneth over into a saucer from which you can sip, gives fish the river the fish. If by 2 inches you avoid a piano falling on your head and later at the hospital fall in love with the doctor who removes a few splinters of ivory and black piano lacquer from your left calf, the joy bringer arranged that. Also, the chilled artesian water spilling from a pipe only 2 inches above the ground from which you drank on your hands and knees on a few boards or branches. You bowed in the muck and drank that sweet cold reaching up. You drank among the skunk cabbage ferns, a small brook at your back. Again, guess what? The joy bringer. In fact, let us praise the joy bringer for these 7 things. 1 right lung, 2 left lung, 3 heart, 4 left brain, 5 right brain, 6 tongue, 7 the body to put them in. Thank you, joy bringer. And thank ye too for the just mown hay cut 1 inch from its roots to bleed its perfume into the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David, Cornelius, Marilyn, Tom. Books are available over in this side of the room. I think people might be willing to sign a few copies. Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Thank you for tuning in to AWP's podcast of the 2007 Poetry Extravaganza. To hear more podcasts of AWP's selected conference events, please visit our website, www.awpwriter.org.